True Crime Historian presents classic tales of the scandals, scoundrels, and scourges of the past, told from official documents, the writings of the pioneers of true crime, and newspaper accounts in the golden age of yellow journalism. Whether it's a love triangle turned bad, a heist gone awry, or a fall from grace, they all have one thing in common. Yeah, that's not gonna end well. I'm true crime historian Richard O. Jones, and I give you new stories every Sunday at www.truecrimehistorian.com or your favorite podcast player.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. You're here in the Big Dumb Fun Show studio, Studio 4, in the classic old Ice House building in Midtown Kansas City. I'm sitting here with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Tonight we have a call-in guest from Chicago, Carlo J. Morelli. Carlo J. Morelli is a dad, a chef, an author, an actor, and a speaker. He also, when he was young, had a close brush with one of our good friends from Chicago, Mad Sam DeStefano. And if you have not listened to our podcast, I think we have two episodes on Mad Sam DeStefano. You probably ought to go back and listen to them and then come back and listen to this one. But irregardless, Mad Sam is one bad dude, and you don't want to get on the wrong side of Mad Sam. And Carlo, our friend Carlo, got on the wrong side of Mad Sam. So, Carlo, it's good to have you here. I'm glad you made it through that thing with Mad Sam. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to survive, indeed.
Well, as an accomplished dad, it says here, a chef, an author, a restaurateur, designer, actor, and speaker, you're from Chicago? I grew up in Chicago?
I'm originally born and raised in Chicago, yes.
Were you from what they call the Patch?
I was from Little Italy, yes. They were in Halstead Street.
All right. Yeah.
At a very young age, I was adventurous and left home, 13 years old, and on my way to Rush Street and lived in the Maryland Hotel.
Here in Gary's notes, he says, your career started at a very tender age. At 11 years old, after winning a citywide art festival, you won an art scholarship.
I did indeed. I won the art scholarship to the Art Institute of Chicago, right. But I was too young to attend because I was still going to grammar school at the time and just moving into middle school. So they gave me night classes instead of the full scholarship. And they had to adjust their models that were there. They couldn't go naked because I was a young boy in the class. And it really caused a lot of derision amongst my fellow students.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine. I bet you were disappointed.
I mean, how many other night class students?
Well, I wasn't really. It was, what was unique is I was already doing costume design for the strippers that were living at the Maryland Hotel.
Oh,
well, I saw girls a lot younger than most boys did.
Well, so you really had a practical experience as an artist, and so the naked body was not unfamiliar to you, even at 13.
Well, it was life or death. If I would have looked embarrassed, they wouldn't have stayed with me. And I knew that it was really, I got a taste of growing up pretty young because these girls were not shy with me at all, and yet they always treated me with a great deal of respect, almost like a child.
Interesting.
So it was really a...
You were a child.
I was a child.
I had to sneak in my dad's closet and find the Playboy magazines to get anywhere even close to that, and then restack them exactly how he had them, you know, in the nightstand. Here you are drawing naked women at 13. You leave home.
I was.
You leave. No wonder you left home at 13. I'm like, well, I'm just going to go hang out with some naked women.
You know, and kind of an interesting.
Well,
an interesting little sidelight here, since we're going to be talking about the Chicago outfit. Did you realize that probably about that same time, Harry Alleman had gotten a scholarship and went to the Art Institute of Chicago? And Harry Alleman was, of course, one of the most, and became one of the most feared enforcers and hitman and robber and all around mob outfit guy that there ever was.
But he blew my cover.
Harry did? How so?
He blew my cover. He saw me. He saw me there and told the Jimmy Alec Ruddy that I was going to art school. And that's how they found out I was selling clothing to the girls. And they called me in and told me, listen, you do business on this street, you have to cut us in. And he felt terrible because he was telling that to a 13-year-old kid, you know.
Really?
He didn't feel bad at all. Come on. That was business. 13 years old and you're selling your, you're designing fashions for these girls. And here it says, then 16 years old, which you're hardly legal to drive probably even then, you start working for Sears and Roebuck? Sears, Roebuck and Company?
I did. I was one of their typographical revamp artists that made the catalog. We did all the catalogs that came out of it. They came out of the headquarters at Sears.
So then after...
I could tell you, Gary, were you doing fashion design for Sears that went in the catalog?
No. I was doing the catalog work.
Doing the catalog
work. I was laying out the pages of the catalog. Yeah. Now, I didn't actually start designing the stripper clothes until I was... At first, I was repairing clothes. I got known at the Maryland Hotel as being the seamstress for all their torn garments. As they were on stage and they would do their stripping, they would sometimes tear their garments or step on the train and tear it, and they would bring it to me and I would repair them. And I started looking at the clothes and said, this is only chiffon. How much are you paying for these outfits? And they told me $100, $75, $80. That was a lot of money back then. And I said, there's only a dollar's worth of fabric in here. I said, we can do this thing for a lot less. And that's how it started.
Interesting. Now, I see in some of your background here, I downloaded from your website that you ended up in Hollywood, a wardrobe and costume designer.
Right from Rush Street to Hollywood. Actually, within 2 weeks, I eloped with my girlfriend, and we went from getting married in Clinton, Oklahoma, on Route 66 on our way to Hollywood. I got there and got a job in Hollywood as a costume designer the day I arrived. And that is a story in itself.
Interesting.
How
I got to be a costume designer at 20 years old in Hollywood on the day I arrived there. There are people that spent 50 years and couldn't get a union button for being a designer or wardrobe, for that matter.
So, Carlo, did you never know Edith Head?
I worked for Edith Head. Worked for okay. 6 weeks.
I tell you what, that...
And an interesting lady. That was not a fun time for me.
Every older movie I've ever saw or watched the credits on, the costume designer was Edith Head.
It was indeed. She didn't do any of that work. It was all done by people from me in the back room.
Yeah.
It was a sham. It was just horrible.
Kind of figured that. So
the bows for all the hard workers.
Yeah. Yeah. Here in Gary's notes, it says the Dean Martin Show, the Perry Como Show, Red Skelton, Bonanza, and Hogan's Heroes. That's great. Hogan.
I worked on the pilot to Hogan's Heroes before it was even sold, yeah.
Did they ever come up to you and go, Carlo, instead of Hogan? You know, Sergeant
I'll
Schultz.
I'll tell you how I got the job. On the first day, I walked up to the gate at Paramount Studios and told them Carlo was here. and I was all dressed up, and my new wife was behind me carrying a pad of paper and a pencil. They said, "What do you mean, Carlo is here?" I said, "I knew the name of the president of the studio, and I said, I'm here to see him. If he doesn't want to see me, he's going to have to come to Chicago and see me there." And he said, "Hold on a second." He picked up the phone, he turned away from me, and he called. I heard him say, "It's just Carlo." He said, "What's your last name?" I said, "Just tell him Carlo is here." He said, "His name is Carlo, and he sounds like he knows what he's talking about." Then he turned around and he said, "Go, all right, here's a pass. Go down the street here and turn left and go up those stairs and go up and go see him. He's waiting for you." And that was it. I got into his office and I said, I was carrying my fashion design book of a fashion show I had given, my biggest fashion show where several thousand people were there. And I said, I'm here to be a designer for you. And he says, "You're kidding me. That's what you got in here for?" I said, "Yes, sir. I'm here to be costume designer, famous in Hollywood."
And you said,
"Soon to be famous in Hollywood." He burst out laughing. And he took a card out of his pocket, and he wrote on the back, he said, "You get into Universal Studios in his office, you call me from there, and I'll give you a job." That's the truth. And I got into the office exactly the same way. And I walked into that man's office, and I said, "Sir, here's a card. I want you to call this number." He said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm here to get a job." He says, "You're putting me on." I said, "No, I'm not." He called me up. He says, "Yeah, he's sitting here in front of me." "No, I'm going to hire him." He says, "No, I'm hiring him." "No," he said, "No, I am." I said, "No, I told him I would go to work for him, and I will. And I thank you very much," and I was hired.
But give me your card anyway, just in case.
I was in the union the next day. That's a true story.
Really? You didn't say Harry Aleman sent me?
I did not, no. And really, I was afraid of the boys in Hollywood that they would know I was there.
You worked
because
on
Because I was working in the studios, and I didn't want to be one of their contacts. I didn't want to be mixed up with them in any way. And I was right about that, because they had a bad reputation in Hollywood.
Yeah, they'd already...
It would have reflected on me.
Yeah, the Chicago outfit had already infiltrated the unions out there, and several of the... Well, Paul Rico was one of them. That was his only arrest, was out of that extorting money from Hollywood producers via the unions out there. So, yeah, you didn't want anybody to know you were connected to the Chicago outfit. They would...
I was going to ruin my career before I hit 21. You know, this is not a good idea.
Really? So now,
but that was an exciting event.
You weren't even 21 at this point.
I was not. I had not turned 21 until I worked on the Sons of Katie Elder.
Interesting. So now, how?
John Wayne and Dean Martin. What's that like?
How did this whole fashion show at Mayo's Norwood House on Harlem Avenue? They're in a kind of it's north of downtown, I believe, still inside the city limits of Chicago,
yes,
I think. Was it in Norwood?
Yeah, it was on North. Yeah, it was in Norwood. It was on North Harlem Avenue, across from the CMA. It was a beautiful restaurant. I had done some clothing for a friend of Mrs. Neal, and she had a problem. She needed to cover a broken arm that she had. She had it in a cast, and she had to wear something to a nice wedding, and she wanted something to cover the cast, and I told her I'd be glad to do it. And I made her a dress with a long sleeve and did all that. And Mrs. Neal, who was terribly, terribly disfigured from her plane crash, said, "Can you do anything for me?" And I said, "Ma'am, we could try." And I became her. She was my biggest fan, because I worked day and night until I finally got a way of working around her disabilities, and they were wonderful.
So tell me,
it was a wonderful experience at Graco.
Tell me a little bit about this Mayo's Norwood House. Who started that? Kind of a little bit. Describe the restaurant. What kind of restaurant was it? I know that Tony Accardo and those guys all hung out there. So tell us a little bit about the history of that restaurant.
The first time I went there to do a fashion show for her. she wanted to do something for some ladies. She had booked a party, and they wanted a afternoon fashion show. And she said, Carlo, do you do them? And I said, I don't really. Well, let's try. So I got some of the girls from Rush Street that were tall girls. They weren't necessarily strippers. They were, you know, kind of more refined than the strippers were. And I got them to wear the costumes, and their boyfriends showed up and sat in the back. And I noticed two men were sitting at a table in the corner, and they were there every time I had gone there, even during the rehearsal. And I didn't know at the time, but it was all the way to Rico and Tony Arcaro. The boys that came with their girlfriends to watch, they sat with them. They called me over and said, how old are you? I said, you know, I'm 15.
No, this was before you went to Hollywood.
Said, you're not 15 yet. It was much
before,
yes.
Not 15 yet.
I lied about my age, and they caught me.
I was kind of curious if the night of the show, if Paul Rico was actually waiting tables.
Yeah, was Paul the waiter waiting tables? I don't think so.
No, not at all. What a gentleman, though. What an
was
absolute
he?
Gentleman. Both of these men were absolutely just refined and gentlemanly. Never swear. I didn't hear, never, if they swore, they didn't do it in front of me. They almost treated me like I was a grandchild. It was really kind of neat. And they had me sit with them and asked me if I drank coffee yet, and I told them I had. And they said, well, all right, you join us for coffee when you come. And that was the way it started. I mean, it was, and Mrs. Neal was a dear friend of theirs, because they were there every day. And she would tell them all kinds of neat things about me. She'd lie about me, you know. To build me up to them, and it was a great experience. I got to know these men different than the rest of the people who got to know them.
You didn't have a gambling
I got to know
problem
them as men.
Yeah, you weren't doing any kind of business
I
with
didn't
them.
Hear that.
You weren't doing any kind of business with them, were you?
No. And when they found out that Jimmy Allegretti a hustled me to give them to break into my business to get a piece of my business. The next day, because they asked me about it, well, who do you know on Rush Street? I said, well, I know Mr. Allegretti. And they said, oh, wonderful. I mean, he's a nice man. I said, yes, he is. And he wants me to cut him in. The next day, I got a call from Jimmy Allegretti to come in and say, don't tell people I'm pushing you around. I'm not pushing you around. You're a nice kid. So he got a phone call from one of those men.
Yes, he did. Did you have to give him any money after that?
Yeah. I would give him if he had a girlfriend or something he wanted, I would give them the clothes.
Okay, all right.
I never had to do a cut.
He'd come to you and say he needs an outfit, I should move over.
No, he never did. But I knew people who he would say, I'm sending this girl over, see what you can do for her.
Yeah.
And of course, I knew automatically I took care of her, you know.
How come they felt so comfortable at Mayo's? It was like their headquarters for Ricardo and Rica for a period of time. They would meet people there. I know there's one guy wore a wire on him there and almost put Rica away there late in his life. So how come they felt so comfortable there at Mayo's?
The Mayo boys were connected, especially Trepanino's husband. And they owned they took over the position of owning the Villa Venice restaurant.
Okay.
So that was connected to Sam Giancana, yeah.
Yeah, so that makes sense. I figured there had to be some kind of a connection like that.
Is that still there?
Yeah, I think it's gone now. I think it finally is gone. We had the Rat Pack there. I was doorman for the Rat Pack. I was the maitre d'. I did that for Jimmy and for Neil.
Is that when they came into town?
Neil Brothers. Yeah, that's when they came into town.
They came to
and
town
I came
and
in,
played
it. Coming in from.
Tell us a little bit
I
about.
I came in with Dean. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about when they came to town and played that. It was at the Villa. I can't remember the name of that club now.
Villa Venice.
Villa Venice.
Villa Venice restaurant. It was out in the country. It had the It was like Venice, and where they had the canals where they would take the boats down the canal. At, you know, when people would go to dine there, they could. They had singers on the canal boats, and it was wonderful.
Wow, that sounds like it's something.
Yeah, and they hired the Rat Pack as a, well, that they wanted to, Sam wanted to make some money. I didn't know Sam Giancana as nearly. I knew him to see him. He knew me to see me. I've spoken to him, small talk, never had a conversation with the man, so I knew nothing about Sam Giancana. I knew he didn't like me because I was staring at him one day, and I got called in on that. So you can't do that anymore.
Why would you be staring at him?
I had already known. I already knew Dean Martin personally. We would go out to eat lunch and stuff while he was doing the Sons of Katie Elder, and then later when he did his show, he wanted me to do the wardrobe for it. So I had to get the dispensation from the unions to carry a wardrobe. Union card as well as a costume designer, and they didn't like that, and that started wars, and I had to give up one of them for the other. But I did the Dean Martin show when we got the call, when I guess Frank got, I must admit to you there's something else about Frank Sinatra did not like me. There was something about me that just chapped his butt. So I met him one day at a party at Dean's house. And I walked up to him. He was standing at the buffet, and I said, I put my hand out, and I said, "This is Sinatra. I want you to know how much of a fan I am." He said, "Who the F are you?" I said, "Well, I'm a friend of Dean." He said, "Who are you to walk up to me? Get the hell away from me." And I walked away, and Dean came over, and right away he interceded. He said, "You, I work with him. He's a good kid. He's all right." And then I knew that I'm one of the few people that that Frank Sinatra knew that he remembered, because he saw me again. He went, "You again, you little asshole, get out of here." So I knew he remembered me.
Really?
I felt honored, at least.
Maybe he'd heard stories about you from when you were 11, 12, and 13 and knew you were a rascal.
No, he never warmed up to me, and never... Man. It didn't last. I was never one of the guys.
Let's go back just a little bit. We've gone beyond the fashion shows. You're a little bit older. Let's go back to those fashion shows that you're putting on at the Mayo's Norwood restaurant. The girls...
Let me give you the background.
Okay.
I'll give you the background to that. The girls that I was doing work for, always they were all being kept by one of the wise guys, one of the boys. There was musical chairs. They were with this guy today and another guy tomorrow. But whoever their current squeeze was would come to the fashion show. And these girls, I had designed them stuff and get them to wear it for the fashion show. And they would walk down the runway and they would turn and they would give the price. And then turn to their boyfriend and point at them. And the boyfriend would say, "Sold." And that's how it went. It was a little game we played. But I let the girls give the price. But they said, "We want to get a little something extra for ourselves." And would I do that? I said, "I don't want to mess with these guys. You guys, you know who they are. I don't want to be doing that." They said, "Well, if we told them that you were hustling us, they'd get mad at you. You do it our way. We won't add too much. We know who these guys are." So I said, "Fine." And that went on for months. 2, 3, 4, 5 months. Where they would say, if a dress that I said, "This is going to be $110. They would say, $150. The guys, they sold. So they wanted the $40 back. And I gave it to them. It started out that they only wanted some little things, little extra things like pasties or tassels or fringe on their panties or something. But then they started going into, I'm going to tell them it's twice the price and I want a second dress. And I said, "I won't play that game with you." Well, this new girl came, brand new girl on the street, hadn't seen much of her. And she looked like Little Orphan Annie. She was a dead ringer with the curly red hair and the big eyes and freckles on her cheeks. It was just, she was a sweetheart. And she was only a year or so more than I was, because I was 15 at the time. She couldn't have been 16 or 17. She was that young. And that was Sam's girlfriend. And she turned around wearing a little frock, probably around $50 or $60. And she said, $200. And his face turned beet red. And I almost, I fell off the microphone. I thought, what are you doing? That's Mad Sam you're playing with. And he said, effing sold. And then he followed her out to the dressing room, which is the back of the kitchen, the meals. And there was, he must have slapped her or something. She never came out of there again. I know she was back there crying because the girls told me she was. But he came out and he pointed at me and he literally growled at me. Girl, you. And he pointed at me. I went, Jesus. The oxygen left the room. I almost passed out. And right away, Mrs. Neal jumped up and went over to the table where the boys were, where Paul and Tony Arcaro were sitting. And she whispered, and he called me over. Rika called me over. And he said, you know what you're doing? You're messing with this guy. You know he's not a happy guy. That's what he called him. He said, you know he's not a happy guy. I said, I know he's crazy. He said, well, I wouldn't say that, but you shouldn't say that either. But you tell me what you were doing. I told him what happened. And he said, oh, well, Jesus, come here, Sam. And he called Sam over because he was trying to solve the problem while he was there in front of me. He didn't want Sam to carry the grudge outside of Neil's. He wanted Sam to know that I was a friend of his. So he called me over to ask him what happened, and I told him. I said, I let the girls do it. It's petty. The girls make it. They only want a little extra something. This new girl probably didn't understand the game, and it won't happen again. And I said, you know, I'm not a big fashion designer. Sam, you're not paying the kind of money for what I do that they would charge you on Saks Fifth Avenue or Bonwit Dollars. I'm cheap, and I care. I'm not like the French designers. They don't give a damn who you are. I do. I care a lot. And he slapped me on the back and said, I understand. And that was it. That was the end of the episode. But I was, if Paul Rika did not intercede, I would have been a dead man. I know it. Because she told him that was Carlo's idea. I know she did. But she wanted to keep from getting a beating.
Yeah.
She told him that you were getting a cut.
That's the story.
Yeah.
I was not, no, I did not give a cut to anybody. Is that what you asked me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just was thinking at that point they had kind of brought you to the carpet to say, hey, you're making money here, stitching up these clothes or whatever. But that wasn't the case either.
I could tell there was a concern on the face of Mr. Rika and Mr. Arcaro when they called me over. I mean, because it was obvious he did not hide his displeasure with me in any way.
Even so, you're saying Paul Rika and Tony Arcaro were a little bit afraid of Mad Sam and were handling this as diplomatic as they could.
Yeah, like, don't call him crazy.
I'm telling you that if you were in the room, you would have known that they were as afraid of that bastard as anybody else in that room. They were crazy because he was a known nut. Everybody knew he was crazy. So obvious that he was aggravated with me. He thought it was my fault that I set him up.
Had you actually heard any stories about him by that point in time?
Oh, yes, it was all over. The stories... Here's the story you hear about him. Don't mess with him. Stay away from him. He's an enforcer. Just stay away from him. He's got a hair trigger. Just leave him alone. That's what you hear. And I tried to discourage some of his girlfriends from doing business with me because I didn't want him to have to pay me because I was afraid of him. Now, 2 years later, he forgot who I was because he came into Ciro's That's what we old zeros. And he introduced himself to me. I'm sure I looked a little older. I was at that time 17, 18. So
I don't know. I'd be kind of relieved by that.
He didn't remember me.
Yeah, as Aaron just said, I'd probably be relieved if he didn't remember me. Start over with a clean slate with Mad Sam.
I was kind of thinking there that I
just didn't want to be remembered by Sam. Nobody did.
Really?
I'm sure.
All these years, I thought that, you know, what was the reason they called him the Outfit? I didn't know, and I think now I know. It turned out that they were just buying outfits for their girls. I said, well, these guys are the Outfit. Can I get the Outfit? They'll make her fit it. I don't care. She says she's 210.
Well,
she's 180.
It's that actually is part of the history. When I went in to see, the first time I got a call to go in to see Jimmy Allegretti, he told me, he said, but you know that the Outfit is more important than that. I'm thinking, which Outfit is he talking about? The one I just made? You know, I had no idea what he was talking about.
That's a good one. So these girls, when these
the
girls.
Same thing with juice.
Say that again.
It was the same thing with the word juice. You know, he said, God, I'm into this guy for $80,000 in juice. And I thought, nobody will juice that much. You got to be kidding me. And I didn't know at the time it was. I mean, you earned a lot early.
Yeah.
Now, they called it the juice because they had to squeeze you.
Yes, well, that's probably it. And they did squeeze you. I watched several times guys get shaken down and the beating for being late. I've seen that more than once. And once it was with somebody who was close to me that I went there and they said, hold on a second, we got to take care of this business. And they beat this guy unrecognizable because he was late.
Interesting.
Wow.
Did you, do you remember any of the other...
This is never going to be...
Yeah. Do you remember any of the other guys, like Frank Sweese or Joey Lombardo, or any of those guys come up there?
I knew Cece Sciori.
Oh yeah.
I knew Cheech Pataglia. Yeah. My uncle worked for Cece Sciori for all the years that I was around, and he worked in Cicero on Cicero Avenue and Roosevelt Road. Stoplight Lounge. He was a collector for him.
So was sports gambling pretty much wide open up there in Chicago? Could you pretty well make a sports bet in any bar, or what was that? What was that kind of that subculture culture?
I have to disappoint you, gentlemen. They didn't do much gambling. I didn't go to places where the gambling was because I was really so young.
Yeah, that's true.
Where I pushed myself in was the strip joints. And they were letting me in the back room of these strip joints when I was wet behind the ears, and I was going back there, and these girls were just dropping their drawers right in front of me. They would look at my eyes to see where I was looking.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the dress that I was picking up to put on them. I would never look at their body. But I did bring one of my friends one day when I had to carry several dresses. And he blew my cover because he went, he just gasped when the headliner dropped her dress.
So
his eyes lit up, and I told him to leave, just leave now.
Were the strip joints, were they all kind of along one avenue, like on Rush Avenue? Where were the strip joints? And can you remember any of the names of the more famous ones, more popular ones?
Well, it was strip joints, and there was a Pussycat Lounge was a big one. The Go-Go joints, they were all dead. There were dancers there, and I did their clothes. Then the burlesque houses, mainly on State Street, on Michigan Avenue, there were a couple of burlesque houses. But they were all on the edges of Rush Street and Old Town and just a little west of downtown. There were clubs.
So could you
the ones that I frequented were primarily strip joints.
So could you tell how did the outfit, was there like, were they kicking up to the outfit? Did you anybody talk about that, or did the girls, how did the money work in the joint for the strip joints?
Well, I'd walk in always when the girls, when they knew I was going to deliver something, and this really depended upon the extravagance of the outfit. If they knew I was going to bring something in, they would have their boyfriends there, and they would just turn to them and say, "Pay Carlo, give him so much money." I always let them make the price, and the guy just reach in their pocket and pull out a roll and pay the rip off several hundred bucks and hand it to me.
Well, you were doing well for.
We didn't always play the game. We didn't always play the game. There were girls that were straight. The girls that were straight were going with the guys in the upper echelon. They were usually straight. They didn't want to lose their position. The girls that were a little trashy, they played the game. And the guys that were with them were just as trashy, so it didn't matter.
Well, they weren't buying those dresses for their gumars, right?
No, that's right. Exactly right.
They were buying them for these girls.
When they had a wife or a daughter that they wanted to buy something for or have me design for them, like a mother of the bride or something, they would have me get a hotel room on Michigan Avenue at the Drake or at the Knickerbocker, where they would meet them and I would take their measurements and everything. So. And that's what we did then. Until I opened up a fashion shop on Oak Street. Then we would do the afternoons was for the Michigan Avenue and North Shore, and at night it was for the girls. We had weird hours. We had from 11 o'clock in the morning until 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and then reopen again at 9 until 3 a.m.
How long did this, how old were you when you left and went to California? I've kind of lost track here.
Yeah, all this is 20. Still before, isn't it?
You were 20, and so you left and went to California and had a whole other career out, with the movies.
Yes.
And then you were help open hotels and were the food and beverage managers for big hotels.
We had a strike in Hollywood, and I got the job to open up the Beverly Hills Hotel to reopen and redesign all their uniforms and their table dressings and all that stuff. And I fell in love with the job. I loved it. I hated Hollywood. It was so phony. I just couldn't. No matter how much money I was making, and gentlemen, I assure you, the money I was making in 1959 and 1960 was more than people make today. And I was a kid, and I was making that kind of money.
Wow.
But I hated it. I hated every moment I went to those, unless it was something fun like the Bonanza, where I got to play with Little Joe and Hoss and all those guys. You know, that was neat. But most of it was boring. I had to be on the set, whether I did anything or not, every day. You can't leave the set. You have to just sit there. That's the union rules. And no matter how much money you make, it was so boring, you wanted to just run away. Anyway, when I got this job with the Beverly Hills Hotel, I got another job to open up another hotel for a company called Western International. And while I was there, their catering director it was during the opening of a hotel, he went nuts. And I stepped in and I took over and opened that hotel as a catering director. And they said, "Great job, Carlo. Would you like to work for us?" And it was a big letdown in money, but I just enjoyed the business. And I stayed with them and became vice president of food and beverage for the company.
So when did you end up in Kansas City?
Everywhere.
Yeah, when did you end up in Kansas City? It was 1970?
It was 1971.
71.
Yes. I got a call from the president of my company that he wanted me to do something for Joyce Hall, because Mr. Hall was so well respected. that it was an important job.
And that's Mr. Hall of Hallmark Cards, right? And that's Mr. Hall of Hallmark Cards.
Yes, Hallmark Cards.
Right.
Indeed. And I would, he put his, my desk in his office because he was so interested in building this hotel. He wanted this to be, he was already an older man, much older man. And I got to know him so well because I sat in his office for almost 8 months while we opened the hotel. And then I went to Houston to open the Galleria in Houston. And I went to Detroit to open the hotel there at the Four Towers. And I went to Peachtree Plaza in Atlanta. Went to the Benevento up in Montreal, Canada. I mean, I just went to travel the world opening hotels. I loved it. Just loved it.
Did
Not
you ever...
a good way to live a life.
Just curious if you ever...
You make a lot of money and you have fun. You get to see new things every day. It was exciting.
Just curious if you ever sent maybe
now,
like a...
Wait, hold on a minute. Aaron has a question.
I had to bring it back around. I was curious if you ever just sent like a little thank you note to Mad Sam DiStefano for not killing you.
No. But I did get... I lost... My contact with the with Meals Norwood House cost me the biggest investment of my life.
How's that?
I wanted to open up a racetrack, the first racetrack in the state of Texas, in Houston. When I applied for the license, they asked me, since I was from Chicago, if I had any relationship with any of the boys, and I told them the story. But I said, you know, I left when I was 20. I'm now 38, you know. They said, well, have you talked to him since? And I had talked to Mrs. Mio since then. And they said, you're still in contact with those people. And they forbid me my license.
That was
a fact.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's I worked a little bit for the Gaming Commission here in Missouri. And they are really, really rigid about that kind of thing. Any smell, any touch of organized crime from anywhere in the United States on somebody who's trying to be a key employee, which is what you would be described as in a casino, a key employee, why, that you're not going to get a license.
No, I told them, I just knew that somebody would say something about my relationship back then if I didn't tell them the truth. And when they asked me if I lived in contact with any of them, actually, Mrs. Neal called me to see if I would take one of her friends, her friend's sons, and teach them the business if they sent him down to me. And I said yes, and that was the end of my career at racetracks.
Well, there you go.
Cost me $11 million, gentlemen. Not an easy thing to
really.
You could have told them you were just the dishwasher.
Well, they tried to do out in Las Vegas, wasn't it? Those covers get pretty thin, and pretty soon that your investment, if you've got a bunch of time and money in something, and they don't care, and something comes out of your history, they'll just take it all, they'll jerk your license, and you're just screwed.
Well, they didn't like me anyway because I owned racehorses. Because they didn't want me to own the racetrack and the racehorses. I had the second biggest breeding ranch in Texas. So, you know, not good. Not good.
All right, Carlo, we're going to wind this down now. We really appreciate you getting on the phone here with us and telling us these great Chicago outfit stories. And
I had fun, boys.
Yeah, good. Carlo, thanks
a
lot.
I had fun.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right, my friend.
Bye.
Bye.
If you have a friend or relative has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that?
I got to say, folks, you need to get the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, available on Amazon to rent. But you're going to want to own it because you're going to watch it over and over again. And after you're done watching that and you want to know more, there's more to be known. And Gary's the guy to tell you about it because he's written a book, Leaving Vegas.
how FBI wiretaps ended mob domination of Las Vegas casinos.
It's a great read, and it's an even better listen. As a Kindle book, you buy the Kindle, and you can get hyperlinks to the actual audio from the mouth of the men that did it. And even then, there's still more you're going to want to know, and Gary's the guy to go to for it, because he's got an app, the Kansas City Mob Tour app. For $1.99, you can take your own turn-by-turn tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City.
All right. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Good night, Aaron.
Hello, my name is Frank Calabrese Jr. I am from Chicago. I was born and raised in Chicago. I am half Irish and half Italian. I followed my father and my uncle into the Chicago mob. I have written a book about my life. It's called Operation Family Secrets. It was number 14 on a New York Times bestseller list. I now have a tour. I am the tour guide. It's FamilySecretsTours.com. It runs in Chicago. And I want you to come on out, and I'll tell you firsthand about the life in Chicago outfits. You are listening to Gangland Wire.